to Car Free Conversations. This is a podcast where we talk about making the most of St. Pete without the use of a car. I'm Domenico.
I'm Sumitra.
And today we have Brian Stevens with us. He is a fellow Car Free St. Pete committee member. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how's it going?
Now, before we get into the good stuff, we'd like to break the ice with a little bit of St. Pete trivia.
Great.
Want to get us started?
Sure. So the first question is, according to local legend, how did the founders of St. Petersburg decide on the name of the city?
Oh, actually, I do kind of know this. Wasn't there a competition between him or somebody from Russia and somebody from Detroit? And like, am I close? It was something like that, right?
There is that story, but there was there is also like two options. So there is option A is a coin toss.
Okay.
And B is, so Dom, like, was it a coin toss?
Yes, it was a coin toss. And it was between John C. Williams and Peter Denton. Or Damien Stennis.
And I think they were the ones who were like, it's between Detroit and St. Petersburg.
Right? Okay, yeah. Got it. So that
one
part.
One guy wanted to name it, I think, after Detroit.
Yeah. And that's why the building on 2nd and Central is the Detroit Hotel.
Okay. That's right. I've heard this tale. Okay.
Yeah.
What's happening there?
It's just been sitting.
I feel like there's been like 14 different announcements. Nothing's ever really come into fruition.
Or that restaurant downstairs, or whatever that space downstairs.
I met someone recently that was involved in that, saying that they're making progress. It's going to be really awesome. Today. I don't know. is that where the camp theme bar is going?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
We'll see how that is. I don't know. I'm like on the fence about like the gimmicky bars, and they're getting kind of old, but it could be fun. It depends how they execute it, I guess.
Right. The theming of bars is very Florida coded, in my opinion, because it all sort of seems to come from Orlando, right? Like, we're theme park capital, so then us doing themed bars is just an extension of the fact that we are so used and accustomed to having themed stuff because of the death grip of Disney and Universal Studios.
There's a lot of it, entertainment everywhere.
Exactly.
Question number two. What are the most consecutive days of sunshine St. Petersburg has ever had? You have four options. Was it 367 days, 384 days, 562 days, or 768 days?
I'll go with the option C.
There is no option. Well, okay, so option C, I guess, is 562. Well, because in my brain, what I thought you were doing was going to put the one in the middle, is what I would do, my strategy.
Yeah.
But you're, okay, 562. That's wrong. It's actually 768 consecutive days of sunshine.
That's insane.
It is insane. Yeah, that is. That is like, what's also insane is I lived in Seattle for a period of time, and they have like a record for the most consecutive days of darkness, which is like, which is, like such a polar opposite, and I could not live there for very long. I came back. Do you want to guess when that was, when we documented 768 consecutive days?
God, it feels like it would have been within the last, I mean, these last 2 to 3 years have been so sunny.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Just goes to show you how sunny St. Pete is. It was between 1967 and 1969.
Got it. Summer love.
Yeah.
Two summers.
Right. Two summers of love. Right.
Next question is, a throwaway.
Yes.
What animal or bird is featured on St. Petersburg city flag?
Pelican, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Got it. All right, got one. I guess I'm allowed to live here now.
Bonus is what animal is the St. Pete Shuffleboard Court mascot? And it is a fictitious animal.
I don't know that. I mean, I've been there. I don't know that I've even seen that in their branding.
It's the Pelligator. It's a half
Oh.
alligator and half pelican, which,
So it was a
wow.
trick. It was a trick question.
It was.
Yeah.
I
But
wasn't
I
sure.
feel that they should put that out more. They should even just have a mascot there.
They should, yeah.
You know, like one you can hug, like a Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about getting hugged by alligator pelicans.
Right.
So is it like an alligator that has a beak and
Yeah,
wings?
yeah.
I'm looking this up right now.
Alligator. Yeah. I got a t-shirt recently. They revived it. The mascot, it's like an old mascot that they had, and they're like bringing it back, which I really am happy about.
Okay. All right. So I haven't seen it yet. All right.
It's pretty ugly, but I love it, so I'm really happy.
A lot of mascots are very ugly.
Yeah, well, I guess that makes them
Right.
except for DJ Kitty. The Tampa Bay Rays DJ Kitty is adorable. If you haven't seen DJ Kitty, go to a baseball game and look for DJ Kitty. He's very cute. And he wears a hat. He's very cool. Looks like a cool cat.
I've been to a
So funny.
baseball game.
You haven't?
I have been to a baseball game. I'm only there for hot dogs, usually.
That's like 60% of the reason to go to a baseball, any
Yes,
baseball.
absolutely.
Okay, next question is, St. Petersburg is known as the birthplace of what?
Oh, I have no idea.
Okay,
Dog bars.
I'm gonna give you options. Is
Okay.
it A, hot dog, B, commercial aviation, or C, nursing?
Nursing?
It's actually commercial aviation,
Oh.
in hope of the first commercial flight, and this happened in 1914. It was oh geez, Janice, right? That's why we call
Yeah.
it Janice Landing. Janice Landing, who was named after the first flight.
Oh, okay. I thought it was named after Janice the Muppet. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't think that, but seems like an interesting thing to claim, considering we don't really even have a substantial airport, but okay. Yeah.
We have two
Right.
airports.
And that plane is at the pier, like a replica of that plane.
In
Yeah, I
the
mean, now that you're saying this, I can appreciate, but I'm just thinking Yeah.
all flight stuff belongs to the Wright brothers. Isn't that Ohio? Yeah, okay.
That wasn't the first commercial flight. This is the first
Right,
time
yeah.
somebody paid somebody to fly them to a place.
Yeah, the
They didn't flew them,
technicality.
I think they flew them to Tampa.
Yeah,
Right.
which is also like, wow.
Right, totally. You could also like, is there a city that claims to be the birthplace of the first class flight? Right, like how far do we take this? Anyways, all right, that's enough shade on St. Pete. I'll carry that with me forever, though.
When is the last time a hurricane struck St. Petersburg directly? And there are four options: 1946, 1966, 1986, or 2006.
2006?
No, it was
Yeah.
1946.
Oh, see, I feel some type of way about this information because I have definitely been here for hurricanes hitting Florida, but then I feel like I keep getting Mandela affected. So when I have like very strong memories of a hurricane hitting here right up, like the 9/11, and then like the very next day we got hit by a hurricane. And like I searched high and low for news in and around that time. But of course, it's really hard to find any
Oh yeah.
news
It
that's
was when,
not, you know, specifically related to that. Did you guys live here during no. I'm not, because I remember it was like, but then to me, then maybe it was like a named tropical storm, but not quite a hurricane. And so I can never decide if it's just whether or not we've not had a direct hit because it's not a category three or above. Again, it's all about the technicalities, or if it was just a named storm, but not a hurricane. You know what I mean?
Or like the eye didn't land on us, but like we still like stuff.
Exactly. We just got a ban, so technically it doesn't count. I don't know.
All right. What
Anyways.
can be found in St. Pete, Florida, of these options? Okay. So you have the Holy Grail, the Lost City of Gold, Atlantis, or the Fountain of Youth.
Fountain of Youth was St. Augustine, right?
Well, this is something that you can actually find. But
Oh, you can find
it
it.
does exist in St. Pete, yes.
Oh, then A, I don't know.
No, it is actually the Fountain of Youth. There is a
Oh.
fountain, a physical fountain on the southeast side of downtown, like right just south of the waterfront.
Okay.
And fun fact, in 1971, they did an analysis of this fountain. I don't know where the water comes from. Nobody knows where it goes. I'm sure somebody does. Apparently they found that it has a high concentration of lithium, which is a drug used in treatment of
Right.
medical.
Where is this fountain? Is it something that people can still drink from?
It's like a
Oh.
water. Yeah. So
Okay.
it's really
So, okay.
near USF.
It's just yeah, it's like yeah, just north of USF, like near the Dulles
Okay.
area. Yeah.
Interesting.
Look
Okay.
around there. Yeah. So yeah, when you're feeling adventurous and bored, go check it out. And thirsty.
Who isn't? What major sports teams are based in St. Petersburg, Florida?
Just the Rays, right?
That too.
One more.
The Rowdies. Okay. You can tell I'm very into both.
What year did St. Petersburg elect its first female mayor? Was it 1957, 1977, 1997, or 2017? How
Take the
progressive
first.
are you?
I'll go with the second choice, B.
You are correct. You are correct.
All
It was
right.
1977. Which, yeah, 1977.
Very
Her name
progressive.
was Corinne Freeman. Mayor Corinne Freeman.
Saint
St. Petersburg.
Corinne. Saint Petersburg is home to the world's largest what?
Oh, concentration of dog parks. I don't know. The home to the largest.
It came up in our conversation earlier.
We did mention it already. Hint.
I said it already.
One of
Oh,
us
I
said
don't know then. I mean, take me there. I don't know.
it's the largest shuffleboard club.
Oh, got it. Sure. Okay.
If you haven't, if you or our listeners, those who are listening, haven't been to the St. Pete Shuffleboard Court, you should check it out. I believe on Friday night, they are open to the public. You pay a small fee, very small. You can bring your own drinks. It's such a fun time. And it's a historic landmark. Very cool. Definitely check it out.
Yeah, it's very well maintained too. I mean, like the people who
Very.
volunteer there are very into it. It's a cool feature.
I'm a member. You can become a member too.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Very affordable. And you support the Shuffleboard Course. Last question is, what famous artist has a museum devoted to his work in St. Petersburg? I believe it's the largest retrospective collection of a single artist in the US.
We're talking Salvador Dali, obviously. Okay.
Another great place to visit if you haven't. The Dali Museum is amazing. If you're just tuning in, we just concluded a little trivia round with our guest, Brian. You're listening to Car Free Conversations on Sunshine 96.7 Radio St. Pete. And Brian, you're in Car Free St. Pete with us. But I want you to tell us about, start out by telling us about your work with the Save MARTA campaign. Can you tell us about what that was and why that was important?
Sure. Well, that's actually pretty much how I got sucked into the vacuum of transit organizing, which has led to several other things. But it was really founded by this woman, Rachel Spiewak, in Atlanta. And it was kind of just originally the vision was just to have a party at the MARTA stations. And MARTA, if you don't know, is the train service and bus service that services Atlanta. And at that time, per usual, not just at that time, but pretty much every single year, there's some sort of ballot measure or some sort of legislative measure that is trying to reduce services and cut funding. So we just she just threw a party. She created a Facebook page. This was when Facebook was much more a much more used platform for young people. I'm trying to remember what year it was. It was so freaking long ago. But ultimately, she just wanted to throw this party and it was a successful event. But then a year later, she had actually moved to New York City. And then there was essentially a grassroots movement forming with all the different transit agencies in the state of Georgia were coming together for another initiative, a ballot initiative for that T-SPLOST. And they invited us, the Save MARTA campaign, to show up. And I was really just, you know, there was no like formal committee with that at that time. So Rachel was like, hey, you know, since I'm not there, would you be interested in taking the torch? I'll make you the Facebook moderator, and then you can go sit in this meeting and see if this is something that we should plug into. So lo and behold, it was so interesting. I showed up to this meeting. It was actually at the MARTA headquarters. And so you had like transit union members there. You had people from MARTA there, you know, like their executive director. And then of course there was also just people that were interested in plugging into transit in some way and supporting it. And they were voting positions into an organizing committee. And because Save MARTA had such an excellent Facebook presence already, and because that was the only social media that people were really using at that time, they were like, we would love Save MARTA to be the media chair. And I was like, oh, sure, that we could do that. And so I just got voted in without even really trying. And it was very interesting. There's a lot of politics in and around transportation and transit in general, but specifically in the South and specifically in Atlanta, there are tons of racial biases that impact the way that people interact with transit. And also, we knew and like we were having these discussions as an organizing committee that ultimately, there was a bunch of white men at the state capitol making decisions about transit, which mostly affected people of color in the state of Georgia because they were the ones most reliant on it. And one of the issues that we were running into quite a bit was that they did not want to speak with the workers because the workers are unionized, and the state of Georgia does not want any union workers on their payroll. And so they were not interested in interacting with the union presidents of those various transit agencies. And they were not, obviously, MARTA itself was not able to speak because they're the ones whose budget's being controlled by the state. So there's a much broader formal process there for them to go through that with the legislators. And so we kind of came up with an idea where we're like, well, hey, why don't we actually just form a small lobby? And basically, all of these transit agencies in the state of Georgia can run support in lots of in-kind ways, provide infrastructure, provide guidance. But we really just need people who can actually go to the Capitol and who these white male legislators will speak to. And so we basically decided on the two white men in that room, we're really going to be the ones that can accomplish that. And so then I got sucked into that vortex very quickly. And so it was great because, you know, I feel like it was really eye-opening for me. I was really young at the time. But it was the first time that I had really interacted in a in that space and the legal space of trying to see an idea from inception, what it needed, what it took to get that to a bill and to get that bill signed by the governor. And the one thing that I will say is that I sort of feel like everyone at some point in their lives pick out a small, even if it's small, and it could be at the city level, it doesn't have to be at the state level, and go through that process. I almost wish that we had like a high school program where kids went through the process of trying to get something put on a ballot or pass a piece of legislation, because it is so damn eye-opening to go through that. And so yeah, that was really and we had a great ripple effect. We would do press conferences. We started doing these things called Save MARTA Days or Ride MARTA Days, where we would invite a bunch of press down, and then we would contact as many local representatives and as many state representatives and say, hey, you kind of have to like bribe them with each other. You'll be like, well, one senator's coming and we'd really like you to be there as well, since this rep is going to be there, the mayor's going to be there. And you really stack your press conferences by pretending you have one, and that baits the other. And then when you get one confirmed, you can use that
Oh
person to
my
confirm
God.
other speakers. It's so bizarre the way that it all worked out. So, and the one guy, the other guy that was with me to this day, I believe he actually like applied in and out, is like the media coordinator for MARTA. He like officially works there now, but at that time we were just like this grassroots thing that was doing that and having these press conferences. But like Reverend Jesse Jackson came one time. Like we really did a great job of
I
getting
think that's
people plugged in. So, and
I think that's
ultimately
really,
that's I'm sorry, that
I
was
was gonna say, I think it's really
your fault.
interesting that whole story, right? Because I think there's something we can learn from that, because there's been some bubbling of opposition to transit even in our area and in our state now that we're having a lot of more people in our cities and we need more transit, there's kind of a little bit of a backlash. So we might have to take a page out of that book and organize some of that for our legislation. Future, and it's
We've
interesting
talked about
how you
that.
did it, you know.
It's unfortunate. I think it's just part of it because, for me, and when we talk about car free and what we're trying to accomplish here is, and that was sort of what we were doing at that time with Save MARTA, is like you really just want to be a stone and the water, and then be a ripple effect that radiates out from that. It's really hard to be one institution that gets these things done, especially when you're at like a state level like that. So it's really important that people plug in more than anything, because if the people are there, I also think that the reps will show up. So if you get enough in mass, just at the grassroots level, that people on the ground, that will also bring the decision makers to the table.
Yeah, that's so important. When did you move from Atlanta to St. Pete? Or you live in Seminole,
I
right?
do, yeah. So, I lived here off and on, but I officially left this area in the year 2000, and then I came back. I moved here by way of Atlanta, September of 2020. I came down, and that was really just for work. I think everyone was going through something, and there was just a financial opportunity here for me, so I took it and came down, and now I've been here. Moving to Seminole was an interesting choice. I think that's because I hadn't lived here in so long that most of my interactions with this area was me going to the beach and riding the bike trail. So when I decided to move here, I bought a house. I had not even seen it, sight unseen, because I was like, I want to live really close to the beach and I want to live right on the bike trail is right behind my house. So that's great. But now that I live here, in retrospect, I probably should have looked at something a little closer in town. But yeah, because for being a car-free committee member, I certainly have to drive to a lot of car-free committee stuff.
Yeah, I lived in Largo when we first moved to the area. And I was like, nope, absolutely not. Because again, my partner wanted to be close to the beach. And
Right.
so this is great. Like, you don't have to live on the beach, but you are very close to it.
Right.
But yeah. And then I think in 2019, you're like, yeah, no, we need to move either to
Right.
Tampa or St. Pete. We cannot be in Largo. And so we decided to move to St. Pete. And so you joined St. Pete. Car-Free St. Pete Committee, right after you moved here, right? I think you have been on the committee for a couple of years.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
did, because I was doing other stuff too. So I would became an event coordinator, like an actual paid event coordinator. So I started working for different agencies in the area, organizing different events. One of them was we would do a Beltline bike tour in Atlanta. So I did that event 2 years in a row. And then I was doing what they call Atlanta Streets Alive. So I was the paid coordinator for Atlanta Bicycle Coalition. What we would do is we were trying to copy Ciclovia's, which is, big open streets event that they do in South America. And so we would take really famous streets in Atlanta, like Peachtree and Highland, and we would close it down for like 5 miles at a time. And really just it, this is not like music. This was not drinking. We didn't have any alcohol whatsoever. This was about actually people just using the streets without cars on it. That was the whole mission there. And
That
so when
sounds
I came here, oh yeah.
amazing. Yeah.
It is. It was a great event. And I saw that you guys did that for Carfree had just done that for Halloween on Central. And I was like, oh, this is very familiar space for me. So let me plug into that. Yeah, so I jumped in right away because I just knew that I needed to be doing some sort of advocacy work in an unpaid way. And that's it seemed like, and then of course, which is great, but then Halloween on Central got taken over by the business district there. So, which is cool. Again, we're just the stone being a ripple effect. So I would still love to see Carfree take an open streets event or do some sort of open streets event, but it takes Yeah, it takes a lot of planning to pull that off, as you guys know, for Halloween.
What capacity do you participate in the committee for the listeners who don't know?
Sure. Yeah. So technically, I am in events with the committee. So and we do organize. I mean, we definitely have had events. We don't have anything major coming up. We did a. I'm forgetting the name of it, but it was the where we took the ferry over to Tampa and did guided
The staycation.
vacation, right? Vacation, yeah. So we did the vacation. We've done bike-in movies or walk-in movies, so just outdoor movies in the park. We do at monthly happy hour so that we can rub elbows with people who are also interested in increasing their safer streets for their neighborhoods. So we don't have anything super major coming up. But yeah, that's really where what I do is kind of plug into the event stuff.
Tell us about what you think are some of the key benefits of promoting car-free living in an urban area like CMT.
Well, I think it's all obviously super connected. And when, for me in St. Pete specifically, what you have really now kind of becoming 34th Street down to Beach Drive is a commercial space, right? Like you can, even if you're somebody who uses a car, you can come and park your car on 30th, and then you've got in any direction, several businesses, restaurants, shops, residences that you can walk to, and it's a high density area. And unfortunately, to this moment, we're still sharing those spaces with cars. Now, the Sunrunner, obviously the most controversial thing that I think has happened since I moved here in terms of transit, has helped really slow down some of the traffic on First and Avenue North and South. But the thing that drives me crazy about that area is just that they were ostensible highways. I mean, and that's the number one complaint you see people have. They're like, ah, you took away like the quickest way for me to get downtown or, get away from downtown. And it's really just messed up my commute. And I've just always thought it's so, oftentimes I have to park on First Avenue. And then depending on where I'm at on First Avenue, there might not even be a crosswalk. So I'm just like waiting for like a row of cars to go blasting past me at like 55 miles an hour, so that I can walk to the place where everyone's like sitting at tables less than one block over outside having an al fresco lunch. It just does not make any sense to have that level of car density in an area where there's so dense with people. It's just so unsafe. And you see a lot of car accidents, specifically on First Avenue. I was in a really horrible car accident last March on First Avenue. And I even had joked with Sumitra at the time because I was like, I had posted the photo of our soup smashed up Jeep. I mean, it was a horrible car accident. And it was from somebody running the light at 16th at 16th Street. And I was like, you know, it's so frustrating to me, like in a joking way, but I was like, I know that some at least one person drove by and was like, ever since they put that bus lane in, you know, like that was gonna be like the takeaway of somebody coming by, because everyone just believes that these roads are freeways. So
Ironically, the
yeah.
travel times have decreased on first.
Exactly. So now we have the data that proves that it actually improved the traffic. And you know, to me, ultimately, I'm going to sound a little snide, but I actually just don't care about how fast you get to go when there are people whose pets are possibly getting off leash, when there's people who have children that should be able to safely get out of the car and walk to their homes without the concern of somebody who's using the street in front of their house to go 60 miles an hour so they get to Tyrone Mall quicker. Like, I miss me. I don't really care. Slow you down even more. Great. That's works for me. So that's my most aggressive platform on safer streets is like, if people live there, shop there, walk there, you know, this, it's not, we shouldn't have highways there. I'm pro slowing it down.
A diet, as they say.
Yeah.
And how do these benefits, do you think, align with the goals of the committee and the broader community?
So, you know, again with Car Free St. Pete, and we, you know, our mission there and my personal mission within it is to encourage other people to do what makes sense for their community specifically, like how they make their streets safer for where they live or for where they work or like to hang out. So, you know, I do that for my own, where I am in Seminole. I do this for St. Pete because I'm there so much and it is the hub, but also I do this for where I'm at, like where I live. The bike trail unfortunately does not have a permanent crosswalk and it doesn't pass over, and we're also by a school and people cut through there, you know, like they're hitting the gas like it's a freeway and it's literally a two-lane road. I've seen people get hit already on the bike trail, and it's just so dangerous to me that one of the things that I would love and have, you know, approached my neighborhood about, but we're unincorporated, so the county is not as plugged in as cities can be, unfortunately, is getting just a couple of speed bumps just that slow people down before they get to the school, before they get to the bike trail. So for me, Car Free is really about getting people the resources and the infrastructure and the right person that they need to talk to make that happen for themselves wherever they're looking to make streets safer or more complete. Doesn't necessarily have to be safer. Complete streets, I guess I should use that word, because sometimes complete streets can mean other things like shade at every bench. So that way, if it's 90 degrees or it's raining, which happens a lot in Florida, people waiting on a bus have somewhere safe to stand. So complete streets, not even just safe.
You know so much about transportation planning, but you have a background in real estate,
I
right? Can
do, right.
you tell us about your background in real estate? I think that's really interesting.
Yes. So I am a real estate broker, and I also am a community association manager. You know, I believe that housing is a human right, and it's an industry. I think that real estate is a controversial industry. And I think that building management can also be sort of controversial because to put profit on housing can be, you know, it's a delicate thing there. And one of the things that I try and do from my lens of what I do for housing is I want people to realize housing security. That's my number one goal here, is to help people find housing security. And then, of course, if they need to relocate, making sure that they're taken care of in that capacity as well. So, any building that I've worked in, it's all about making sure that we are really on the up, great. Realtors, great property managers. We want that. We understand that housing is something that people need to feel safe in. It needs to be something that they want to return to. We want them to stay. So yeah, my background's in real estate, and I do believe that when we're talking about transit, it's always interconnected to housing policy as well. It's all part of just that bigger, larger spectrum of urban development. So, I'm always conscious of that too, being like, how does real estate plug into this? And knowing that sometimes people are a little like, oh, well, you're somebody who makes your money from housing, so of course you're going to be, super interested in reckless development. You're going to be, super interested in whatever's great for developers, and who cares about the character of the neighborhood. So it is something that I try to be conscious of when I'm working in terms of bringing housing to people, because that's always a sticky thing too. Just like transit, people get very passionate about,
Yeah.
people passionate people are passionate about their cars, they're passionate about their neighborhoods.
For sure. And since you broached the subject, how does the transportation access or lack thereof affect the property values in urban areas? What have
So,
you seen that firsthand?
it really, so the data does not, it's not specific. I mean, in terms of property values, it really just depends on the buy-in. So, you were talking earlier about the fact that you lived in Seattle. So there, they're continuing to extend their rails in Seattle. They're building further north and further south. And that's actually, we'll see those property values are starting to increase in Washington on account of their light rail getting those expansions and their, or the rail in general. And that not so much in the South, right? So not the same story in Atlanta. In fact, like, being near MARTA station is something that could have in the past been seen as a detriment, because people there are afraid that transit's going to bring criminals into their neighborhood. I mean, that's been such a huge hurdle there with getting MARTA expansion. So it really depends on the buy-in from the community. So places where you see that there's already some basic transit, some basic train lines, and states like Washington and in California, it will increase the property value, but it's not hard line. It definitely varies by state by state.
Yeah, that's interesting because my neighborhood in Chicago has a CTA rail line and a commuter rail line, and the commuter rail line, there is a station in the neighborhood, and then there is another station farther south in another neighborhood, but they're building one more station in between, and because of that construction, the property values in the neighborhood have already gone up because people are like, oh, we are getting another station for the
Right.
neighborhood. So it has suddenly become like a more desirable neighborhood to live in because now you can take the commuter train to the suburbs or to downtown.
Sure.
It has been interesting to see.
Well, and I do, one of the things that anytime I go and speak about car-free or do any sort of interviewing like this in the public, I go to this statistic all the time because it's so critical, which is that just in the last 25 years, we've added 2 billion people to the world population, which means in the last 7 years, we have this huge influx of young people looking for housing, looking for jobs, looking for resources, needing transportation, because that whole idea that housing is too expensive, that's not unique to St. Pete, that's not unique to Florida, that's not unique to the United States. This is becoming a problem everywhere. Everyone is like, I can't afford rent. I can't buy a house. What am I going to do? And then and I keep being like, well, it's 2 billion people. We added a lot of people, and that is why you're feeling the squeeze. And the thing to circle back to my original point on that is that I do actually think that the younger generations are kind of already just like hip to transit in a lot of ways. Like you're seeing like a decrease in people getting their driver's licenses or buying their own vehicles, and very purposely moving to communities that have transit available. So I think that we have actually seen the paradigm start to shift in a pretty visible way with the younger generations coming up, which is great. So yeah, that's, the more they're interested in it, of course, that's going to increase the property value. But the goal here for me is not about increasing the property value. I think that when you have a vision of housing, that like a successful housing initiative, that means that housing is affordable. So, but at the same time, we're not in a situation where there's this huge influx of federal or state funds coming down to get developers to create housing that is affordable or is, for middle class families. So at this point, because we do rely on private capital to build housing, I mean, like that's just the way it is in this country. I definitely kind of lean more towards, well, then like let's just have as much housing as possible, right? Like let's do as much housing as we can, because that is going to at least give these 2 billion people who need a house an option, first of all. And then the more options they have, the more that private capital now has to compete with itself. So that's really where I'm at.
Which is an argument for better transit as well, right? Because you can't build all the housing in one walkable area, right? If you have transit to connect those spaces, then you can build further out in areas where land is cheaper, et cetera, and people can still have access to the amenities that they need.
No, completely agree. More houses, more ways to get to your houses and to get to your jobs without needing a car. It's becoming critical.
Yes. When I was looking for an apartment here, it was one of my biggest criteria is that I wanted a station 2 minutes walk from my apartment. And like that was like the first thing on my list is like, you know, I'm not going to drive in Chicago. Absolutely not. So
And
yeah.
even just because I have a partner and we were looking at moving, he lived in New York City. I never lived there, but we were looking at houses, or not houses, but condos there and apartments. And whenever we'd like be running the calculations, I was always like, the second like you take away two car payments and two insurance bills in Florida, I'm like, how much more money you have to put towards your housing? It's major. I mean, easy. Like I was like, oh, maybe New York's kind of affordable. They get you with those HOA fees, but like, yeah, in the end, those old buildings will get you. But ultimately, yeah, if you don't have to think about the cost of a car and the cost of insurance, that absolutely puts more money to your being able to afford housing that actually is large enough for you and your family.
Yeah, it's definitely becoming more increasingly an important thing to consider for people. And in fact, when I moved back to St. Pete, you know, I had lived in, you know, New York and Seattle, and I had gotten used to not having a car. And the cost of getting a car today is like so much higher than when I used to live here, right? Like in the past 10 years, it has just gotten so untenable to buy and maintain a car. It's so expensive. Like
It is.
I you know I when I was in college, I bought my car for $13,000 new. Like never could
That's
ever, right?
gone.
Yeah, no way. And I was looking at cars, and I was like, I can't afford to have a like to maintain the car. And so I realized that if I forfeit the car, I can get I can live in a place that is closer the amenities that I need. So I live a little closer downtown to where the Sunrunner stop is, and I can get around that way just fine. And so the money that I saved on buying a car, I put towards my house, and I live a lifestyle now that I'm more comfortable with. And so yeah, I think it's becoming increasingly more important to people. You know, for me, it was like a huge decision factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people are doing that calculus and figuring that out and becoming one car households, but it'd be better when the infrastructure is there where they can just go completely car free. That's great. And there's a million ways to make that happen. Not a million, but there's many ways we can make that happen. And there's many
Well,
different vehicles that aren't cars, right? Like we now have scooters, we now have car shares, we now have if push come to shove, you can take an Uber, you can get in a Lyft, right? So the versatility of getting around without a one vehicle, without owning a vehicle, it's growing every single day. So
and yeah,
you can't go ahead.
I wish Zipcar was available in St. Pete. Like it is so nice that you can just rent a car for a day and then like drop it off like where you picked it up from, and then so whenever you need it you have it, and then you don't
Right.
get a headache
Or
often.
that Target trip, right? Where
I'd
you
say
need,
so. Yeah.
So you've kind of already answered it. I wanted to ask, but I want you to elaborate a little bit more, right? About this relationship between transportation access and property value. How can we sort of enhance that relationship, and how can urban planners, policymakers, and community stakeholders collaborate to make a more equitable and sustainable transportation system?
I'm
Bit of a
so
look.
sorry. Yeah.
I believe in you. I believe in you.
Oh, you know what? My screen changed too. I lost you, Dom. I know you're still on here somewhere. So you were asking me like if there's specific policies or strategies, right? Is that, for me,
What kind of strategies can we employ? How can we collaborate with planners, policymakers, community stakeholders to sort of heighten that relationship between transportation and property values and make it more sustainable, more equitable, give more people access to
Got it. Well, I don't know if this is a direct answer to that question, but just to say, in my opinion, one of the great things about St. Petersburg is that it actually continues to like the city and the county here, they do make pretty solid decisions around the future of housing and the future of transit here. And I know it's not perfect, but what's that quote? I mean, like perfection is the enemy of progress, and I think that that is can be so true when you actually see people making thoughtful choices. You always will catch the little bit of the clapback from some of the general public who's not satisfied with those decisions because it didn't perfectly meet one way that they thought that this could happen. So I don't have that. I don't have a specific strict guideline, but what we do, what we're seeing here, to increase housing affordability that the city of St. Petersburg is moving towards is, I mean, they very recently within the last year, did change some of the zoning that will allow some one single family zoning to now become, fourplexes. And what's great about that is they, I feel like they heard the communities and said, okay, well, we will come up with the design criteria so that it feels like it's part of the neighborhood still, that this was not something that got added on. So there's thoughtful policy happening here. And we've not really quite seen the benefit of that. A, it's too soon, but B, like it again, it does rely on private money to make that happen. So it's not perfect. But it was a nice zoning win to be like, okay, here is a future where we are putting more housing in places where there used to be a limited supply. We also have zoning in St. Petersburg that allows us to do no parking requirement for condos or apartments. I think it's less than 750 square feet. And so that's great because this gives developers the option to not have to worry about building that extra expensive parking garage or having the street parking available for small housing for young people that, there's a lot of people who could live in a 750 square foot housing moving into the city who aren't going to care as much about cars if we have great transportation alternatives for them. But one of the things that I always point out is, and I don't ever, I never engage online. Like, I think it's such a bad way to get people to convert their way of thinking is to fight with them in the comments. But if you ever notice, whenever you see like St. Pete Rising or I Love the Burg or one of our, local, what I don't know, local personalities, they're not really tastemakers, but they're not influencers either. They're almost media at this point.
They're
But
media.
yeah. So whenever you see them announcing a new development, there's always a comment, at least one to five, that is like, well, where are they going to park? And I'm always like, well, I think the person who buys that property knows where they're going to, like they know that that's not an option for them, and they've decided that that's okay. So your concern, not necessary, because you probably already live somewhere where you can park, and that was a priority for you. That's not a priority for everyone. So it just kind of, you can just see the way that car culture is so ingrained in us that the very idea of a home, an apartment complex or a condo condominium complex that's going to be much needed housing without parking is just so confusing for people. They can't really wrap their heads around it. So like I said, in an indirect way, I actually feel like St. Pete kind of has been doing a lot of the right things. And, could they be even more aggressive about getting even more zoning changed, right? Like allowing us to add much higher apartment complexes, maybe up and down 34th, which is a lot of unused industrial space these days. Sure, but I actually kind of think that they'll get around to it. I do think that our city right now, as long as we continue to support this and be very vocal and make sure that the five people who comment about there not being parking, that our city officials see us, the other people who are like, no, this is great, it's fine. I think that we should proceed forward. And the more we see those types of housing, buildings and communities be successful, the more we'll see the city get behind changing zoning elsewhere. I can, for me, the way that we, and like you said, we kind of already talked about this, the way that transit really works into that is just making sure that by expanding the transit, we have the Sunrunner now, which I think is excellent. And I think that it certainly serves a transportation demand. But is there space for us to have more bus routes added? Is there space for us to have more rapid bus lanes added? Absolutely. There's tons of space. We have to have the Sunrunner be seen as a successful transportation venture. So for us in St. Pete, the way you do that is we use it and keep using it and encourage people to use it. And I think that that will help us keep broadening that type of transportation initiative. Because to me, I say this all the time in the committee, I believe but like buses are it. Like that is it. We need more buses. We already have the infrastructure in place. I know it's not a sexy aesthetic to get on a bus. I don't know why people are so challenged by that. Like I always say, they could probably interrogate that within and maybe come up with some interesting biases, which makes them sort of anti-bus. But we don't have to put train stations in. We don't have to lay rail down. We just need to have more buses. And we need to have buses that people like riding, right? And making those buses have the ability to people charge their phones while they're riding it, have them make sure that the bus stops have coverage so people can stand safely underneath a bus stop if it's raining or if it's super hot out. So those are all those things that I think work into it as well. So I don't know. Does that sort of, I feel like we kind of talked about a lot of things, but my perfect vision is not, I don't have a perfect vision. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like the key answer to my question about how to bring all of this together and how to involve policymakers into solving these creating this environment is zoning. You've mentioned zoning so many times. It sounds
It is.
like that's how you feel. We can sort of get that collaboration going to make this sort of thing possible, to make downtown living more accessible to people.
Downtown and even beyond downtown, and I already said Tyrone Mall. Think about how much space right there is underutilized, not utilized at all. We're not going to see the return of Best Buy, right? Like, so we've just got all of this space, and people, it's interesting because in St. Pete, a lot of times you have to fight nostalgia as well. So, like, I'll see somebody will suggest maybe on Reddit or Facebook or somewhere. Be like, we really, something what I'm saying right now, like, that's not a great use of space. Like, it'd be really cool to see housing over there. And people will say, like, not the mall of my childhood. And I'm like, well, what are you doing there week after week? You're not, like, you're not actually going to that mall. And so, like, it's just such a poor use of space. And like I said, 34th, I mean, I don't know if we need it. It's something that realtors do all the time. That raises eyebrows as they go in and rename stuff, right? They come up with new names for neighborhoods. It's like now the, I don't know, it'd be like the South Powell Quarter or something like that. Like, so they come up with cute, creative names to drive in interest in that neighborhood. US 19 needs a major rebrand, right? So it's just, there's so much unused space on there. And to me, again, like, let's not just let giant big box stores with huge parking lots sit empty, rotting for something that's never going to come. That's gone. But what's here is people who need housing, right? So.
Well, this has been a really awesome conversation. We've talked about
Okay.
all it has been wonderful having you on. Sumitra, do you have any last questions?
No, I think Brian really ended quite nicely with that last comment. So thank you so much for joining us, Brian,
Of
today.
course. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on this week's edition of Car Free Conversations.
Please follow us on social media. We are Car Free St. Pete on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter.